For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Bangladesh says it signed an agreement to return hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims who fled Myanmar during an army crackdown. The country's foreign ministry says people will start to return within weeks. It and Myanmar say the details are being worked out. Over 600,000 Rohingya have fled to Bangladesh from Myanmar's Rakhine state since the army started a crackdown following a series of deadly attacks on police posts. A separatist leader of one of Ukraine's breakaway regions, Luhansk, accuses his former minister of a coup attempt. Kiev sees the armed standoff among the law enforcement groups there as a provocation and a potential threat to the civilian population. The Kremlin's distanced itself from the conflict, saying it's closely monitoring the situation. Daria Bondarchuk reports from Moscow.
The leader of the self-proclaimed Luhansk Republic, Igor Plotnitsky, said gunmen blocking central streets of the provincial capital since Tuesday are supporting the former interior minister of Luhansk, Igor Kornet. They're refusing to subject to Plotnitsky's orders to clear access to several administrative buildings. Plotnitsky sacked Kornet last Monday on allegations of his links to Kyiv and now accuses him of trying to stage a coup d'etat. Authorities in Kyiv are concerned over possible instability that could threaten civilians in Luhansk and the neighboring regions. The Kremlin said it is closely monitoring the situation, however it refrained from elaborating on the issue. Daria Bondarchuk, Moscow.
Dozens of people have had to be rescued from flooding in the UK. The northern county of Lancashire was badly hit after heavy rain. Transport services are being disrupted in the northwest of England and in Wales. Peter Story reports from Lancashire.
Several local households and businesses are counting the cost of the bad weather here again after persistent rain yesterday and overnight. In Lancashire, 27 residents had to be evacuated from their homes in the Lancaster area alone, with a further 70 people rescued. Just over the border in Cumbria, emergency services were called out more than 30 times, including to help people whose vehicles were stranded in floodwater.
A man in France who almost died after suffering burns on 95% of his body is now in recovery thanks to a skin graft from his twin brother. French doctors say the procedure is the first to transplant skin over such a large area. Elena Cassas reports from our Paris bureau.
The 33-year-old man sustained 95% burns in an accident at work in September 2016. But because he has a genetically identical twin brother, doctors were able to give him a series of skin grafts without his body rejecting the donor skin. The patient underwent 10 graft surgeries over 4.5 months. Most skin transplants are done over small areas and require the patient to take heavy doses of immunosuppressant drugs. But the fact that the donor and the patient were twins allowed a transplant over a bigger scale than has been possible before.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Yeah, extraordinary weather in some parts of the northwest today, not in central Manchester. We did have some heavy rain earlier on, but nothing like the flooding we've seen elsewhere. It is Thursday, of course. It's the 23rd of November 2017. My name is Richie Allen. Hope you've had a good Thursday. And you're looking forward to the programme, do tweet at Richie Allen Show to stay in touch with me during the course of the next 2 hours.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Right, in the second hour of the program, or as much as we can anyway, I'll be throwing the phone line open and the Skype line to the program open. Now, we have a brand new phone number. We're very clever here. We've changed the number because we're moving into a brand new year. So if you're calling in the UK, it's 0161 for Manchester. Then it is 818-2018. That's 0161-818-2016. Fear not, there is a meme pinned to the top of my Twitter page, and there is a meme on the Richie Allen Facebook page, and the meme has all the details, including how to call from overseas. But you can Skype chat with Richie. Priority given to those who've not called the programme in the past. And I really do mean that this time in the second hour. The meme is up. It's 0161818 2018. We'll do that in the second hour, or for as much of the programme as we can, because there are a few things to get through in the meantime. The 23rd of November 2017. Chilly old day today, and as I said, and you would have heard in the news, some bad weather for some parts of the Northwest, and some people, God love them, and I really do mean that, coming to terms with flooded downstairs areas of their houses and mud and water up to their knees. Dreadful, dreadful thing that. Water is so destructive, isn't it, when it comes to flooding and all of that. So good luck to anybody who's dealing with that nonsense. We're live on davidicke.com. We'll be hearing from David in around about 15-20 minutes time. He's in Maastricht. He won't be speaking to us live, but he filed a report for subscribers to davidicke.com yesterday from Maastricht. What was astonishing about that was the synchronicity and the timing of that report, because there's an incredible story in the Express newspaper today, tragically not covered at all by BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Sky or the usual suspects. But it's about a report that was kept hidden from the public when the UK joined the European Economic Community. Right? A report that said basically what would come to pass, what has come to pass in terms of loss of sovereignty, loss of power, loss of control and all of that. Amazing synchronicity. And of course, David began writing about this sort of thing many years ago and got into this in great detail in a book called And the Truth Shall Set You Free many moons ago. So we'll hear from David. There's quite a few things to get through before then. 6.5 minutes past the hour for Thursday. Good old. Right, let's crack on then. Massive story today, which, to give credit to the much maligned, at least maligned by me and this programme, maligned UK media, to give credit to the media, at least they covered it. But they didn't cover it in any depth. They just mentioned the story and they played a quick soundbite from the Institute of Fiscal Studies, but they didn't cover it in any depth. It was a bombshell story, one of the most startling stories of 2017, and a story that should strike fear. Not that we want to be fear-mongering. This programme doesn't fear-monger. We try never to do that. But this report today should wake people up, shake them to their very foundations. What is the report? Well, workers are facing the worst squeeze on pay since the mid-19th century. That's the mid-1800s. That's according to the Institute for Fiscal Studies. The squeeze on living standards over the 10 years since the financial crisis, manufactured financial crisis. The squeeze on living standards over the 10 years since the crisis has been one of the worst on record, says Paul Johnson, the director of the Institute of Fiscal Studies. Johnson said, "What's remarkable is it looks like we've got at least another 5 years to go before we get anywhere near to having earnings back to where they were in 2008. He said, at least 5 years. It's a lot longer than that. It'll be a lot longer than that before wages grow in real terms again. He went on to say, did Paul Johnson, this is staggering stuff, this. He said, that's wholly unprecedented and certainly the worst since the mid-19th century and possibly worse since before then. He estimates, Johnson does, people will earn £1,400 a year less on average by the early to mid 2020s than forecasts actually suggested last year. Here's Paul Johnson very briefly speaking with the BBC.
The squeeze on living standards over the decade so far is historically unprecedented. What's remarkable is it looks like we've got at least another 5 years to go before we get anywhere near to having earnings back where they were in 2008. That is wholly unprecedented, certainly the worst since the mid-19th century, and possibly worse since even before then.
Amazing, right? At least 5 years, he said. At least. Lovely. Now, this is the essence of the Hunger Games Society agenda. This planned agenda that we've been telling you about for ever since David Icke coined the term and the phrase and wrote about it some years ago. This is planned that in the next decade people will be worse off than they were in 2008. And that's a siren song, you know. I mentioned that this is the most staggering financial news this year or any other year. It's an alarm call. It really should be. People just getting by. So if you're in a household with two working adults, so you and your wife or you and your husband are working, maybe you've got one child or two children, maybe you've got a mortgage. What Paul Johnson of the Institute of Fiscal Studies is telling you today, and I am not exaggerating it, and I am not fear-mongering, Johnson is telling you that you are dead in the next decade. You're done for. It's all going to be gone. Why? Because interest rises and inflation will see to that. I spoke about this at great length in last night's monologue. This is what's coming down the line. Remember, this isn't scare tactics or fear-mongering. I've got to repeat that. This is the truth. UK economists were in agreement today that the UK debt will not stop growing until at least the 2060s. Now, of course, I explained last night, factually, it will never stop growing, ever. It's never going to stop growing, this mountain of debt, which is around about £5 trillion now, not the £1.9 trillion official figure. Economists saying it'll be in the 2060s by the time we start to level off and start eating into the debt. No, no chance. And what we've heard from the Institute of Fiscal Studies, wages will not grow to meet interest rate hikes and inflation in the next coming years. Meaning what? Meaning you're fucked. It's all over. If you have a mortgage, it's all over. Think about it. And while this is happening, they're working very, very hard to make their agenda foolproof. And one of the ways they're doing this is the cashless society. Again, we touched on this briefly last night, where they can take from you electronically and you can do nothing because you can't withdraw your cash. Watch this very closely. Very, very, very closely. Staggering stuff from the Institute of Fiscal Studies today. It's going to be years before people will be earning at levels that they were earning before the 2008 planned and very well executed financial crash. And they did mention this story today. They did play the sound bites of Paul Johnson, but no UK media outlet would touch this today. Not a single presenter had the balls, had the cojones to say, hang on a second, what is this going to mean for people who are 5 and 10 years into a mortgage? What's it going to mean for them in the 2020s? Because the answer is, they're fucked. It's all over. 13.5 minutes past the hour, unless something is done about it. Of course, unless something is done about it. And throwing your weight and your lot in with frauds and lawyers and gangsters like Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell is not the answer. Because those lawyers and buffoons are going to do the same thing if they form the next government, which they probably will. Well, at this moment in time anyway. You know, if there's an election tomorrow, they'd probably form a government with the Lib Dems maybe and others, a coalition. Those fools will add to the mountain of debt, will not take on the central banks, will not take on the criminality of the European Central Bank, the World Bank, the IMF, the Bank of England, HSBC. They will not do that. They will not take back control of the issuance of money. As long as they don't do that, this goes on and on and on and on until there's nothing left for you, for me, for our friends, for our family. Nothing. Nothing left. That's what this does, you see. Oh, Corbyn, he's biding his time. Somebody said to me yesterday, oh, he's really pragmatic. He's just playing the game till he gets in. How's that worked for you over the years? How many times are you going to say that the socialist you love today is only playing the game until he gets in before you wake up? People earning £1,400 less a year than they did in 2008. And it's going to get worse. And it's meant to get worse. This isn't because of bad management of the economy. This isn't because we have idiots running the government, even though we do. It's not about just bad plans, bad economic policy, bad ideas. It is an agenda. 2020, 2030, give it any name you want. It is a social cleansing agenda to eradicate people, to erase people out of existence. Jesus Christ, what more do people need? When a guy from the Institute of Fiscal Studies says today, I can't believe this. This is what's happening. Right, rant over. Transgender. This is everywhere. This is why we talk about it so much. RT had a report on it today about a children's book in Sweden, a new children's book. You'll first of all hear the RT presenter. Then you will hear UKIP London Assembly member David Curtin. And then you will hear Peter Tatchell. Have a listen to this report.
A children's picture book that's been published in Sweden and promotes transgenderism has been widely criticised and even branded as dangerous propaganda. The story features a man who dresses as a woman and his horse, who wants to be a dog. Now, the author says it's meant to show children that they can be whoever they want to be. Here's some of the reaction we've been hearing.
When you're an adult, when you're over 18, you're entitled to do what you want in the privacy of your own home. And I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But propagandizing this kind of thing to children who, you know, it can damage them in their natural development as boys and girls. You know, nature is binary. Nature creates male and female. There are boys and girls. And we hear, you know, as well as the book, moves to try and ban the words boys and girls, men and women, mothers and fathers in primary education. And this is a time when children really need to be affirmed in their identity as who they are. And this is just something that's far too much, too young, is going to confuse people.
It is part of a natural spectrum of life for all animal species, human and non-human. This book is not about promoting or encouraging transgenderism. It's about trying to affirm young people who don't feel they fit neatly into the male-female roles, and trying to tackle bullying and prejudice.
This is nonsense by Peter Tatchell, and I have a lot of time for Peter Tatchell, because Peter Tatchell is not a progressive maniac, enemy of free speech. Peter Tatchell will fight to the death for the rights of people to say whatever they want, whether it's, you know, whether it's derogatory towards LGBT communities or whatever. Peter Tatchell is a good guy, but he is wrong. He's absolutely wrong on this. It's not about kindness or preventing prejudice against children who might think they're in the wrong body or who might be gay or might be lesbian. It isn't. There's a very interesting story in today's Daily Mail. Some of you were tweeting this around. It was on Facebook as well. The headline, Mother Demands Her Son's School Take Sleeping Beauty Off the Curriculum Because the Princess Doesn't Give Consent to Be Kissed and woken up by Prince. And the story goes, a mother has demanded her six-year-old son's school ban Sleeping Beauty because the princess doesn't give consent to be kissed. The woman is Sarah Hall from Northumberland Park, North Shields. She claimed the fairy tale promotes an inappropriate sexual message to young children. She argued the story is irresponsible because it teaches children it is acceptable to kiss women while they are asleep. The mother of two said, I think it's a specific issue in the Sleeping Beauty story about sexual behaviour and consent. Now, I'm 42 years old. I imagine that I was first read Sleeping Beauty or first exposed to it sometime when I was probably 4 or 5 or 6 years old. I don't remember among my friends in my primary school an epidemic of young boys running around looking to find women asleep in bed so that they could kiss them. She said, It's about saying, is this still relevant? Is it appropriate? She said she's worried about what message the tale, which features a prince waking up a princess by kissing her, she's worried what message that sends to impressionable youngsters. She left a comment in her son's record book and contacted the school to ask if it could be taken out of circulation for younger classes. She said, in today's society, it isn't appropriate. My son is only 6. He absorbs everything he sees, and it isn't as if I can turn it into a constructive conversation. This is lunacy. This is lunacy, and it's not an isolated example. This is progressive, fascistic madness. I demand that Sleeping Beauty be taken out of circulation because it gives false impressions to young boys. Who? What is going on with these people? This is the thing I find very hard to come to terms with. It's one thing to be influenced by the Owen Joneses and all these idiots, this progressive fascist left in this country. But surely these people have some semblance or modicum of self-control left, individual thought left in their bodies, in their brains. Surely it must have occurred to her at some stage. I'm being a bit of an idiot here. Sleeping Beauty is an ancient story. It's a good story. It's a good news story. It's a love story. But no. I'm going to write to schools and say we need to get rid of Sleeping Beauty. It's madness. I mentioned yesterday on the programme that teachers are being advised not to refer to female pupils as girls. This is all part of the same agenda. Charlotte Avery is the president of the Girls' Schools Association. Charlotte Avery agrees with this nonsense. She agrees that it's best not to refer to female pupils as girls. She spoke with Piers Morgan, who these days is a co-presenter of Good Morning Britain on ITV. Have a listen to some of this.
You are the president of the Girls' Schools Association.
Indeed.
Why do you call it girls?
Well, good point. The thing is, it has been called that for as long as it's been in existence, and maybe we need to think about change of title. This is a topical issue and something that many, many schools are addressing, not just through thinking about pupils' necks or how we call them in class, but also things like uniform and policies to make the children feel comfortable at school.
Yeah, let me just put this to you. As the father of a five-year-old girl, who's about to be 6 tomorrow, actually, happy birthday, Elise, if you're watching, I would
happy
like
birthday,
her to be known as a girl. I would like teachers to call her a girl, and other girls to be girls. When my 3 sons were at school, they were boys. I would like them to be addressed as boys, because guess what? They were born boys, and she was born a girl. And what is happening is that teachers like you, with the greatest of respect, are buying into this frenzy at the moment that gender is now an offensive thing, that we can no longer call girls girls and boys boys.
Now, you would have thought the teachers, of course, by very nature of the fact that they teach, right, would be pretty good when it comes to critical thinking faculties. You would have thought the teachers, of all people, would be saying, where's this crap coming from? It would appear not.
Boys. And I find that the most damaging part of this for children. Why are we confusing them with all this gender claptrap?
No, right, OK, so I don't think is a question of confusing anyone. Many teachers and schools will address children by their individual names. That's what we want, that the individuals are feeling valued in their schools. And teachers will continue to talk about boys and girls. What Natasha was trying to talk about was a context in which there is a high rate of suicide amongst those who identify as being LGBT, and that is higher than heterosexual children.
Yeah, but that wasn't, with respect, let me jump in. I think that's a very convenient thing to put up into this debate. to try and justify it. I've read everything that she said, and actually there was a passing reference to transgender children, of which we know are a tiny, tiny percentage of school populations in this country. And that's not to diminish that there may be issues there, there are. But actually, the vast body of what she said, Natasha Devon, at your conference, was directed generally about the use of the phrases girls and boys. She said, I would never walk into a room at an all-girls school and say girls or ladies because it's patronising. Well, what about an all-girls school? Isn't that patronising? Isn't it patronising that you call your own association the Girls' Schools Association? Isn't it patronising, with respect to you, Charlotte Avery, that I check your Twitter feed and all you do is constantly talk to girls? Here's one from the 30th of October. The sky's the limit for girls if we teach them to shoot for the moon. I totally agree with you. I want the sky to be the limit for my little girl. What I don't want is for you to be leading as president of the Girls' Schools Association, a name you haven't changed yet, even though you don't want people to be called girls. I don't want you to tell my little girl she's not a girl. Why
we
don't you all just
proud
stop this
of
nonsense?
Supporting girls in our schools. We're also aware, though, we've got children who don't necessarily identify as girls, and there's a balance to be struck. So we are absolutely supporting space for girls to be girls. I was talking yesterday on another programme about the importance of space in order for women to be able to find voice and to be able to articulate their views. What I also have to say is that I think that young people, if you talk to them, they are much more relaxed about this issue than our generation or older people. And they find this whole debate quite curious because they don't feel that this is an issue for them so much as it is an issue for us. I think it's something that we as older people need to come to terms with, and that the young find this quite a curious debate. So what I'd like to say is that we are really upholding young women in our schools as...
You can't call them women, though. Why are you calling them women?
Because the vast majority of them are women in
the schools. Well, of course, because there are old girls' schools.
My about this. So what
yeah,
I'm
here's
saying
my, here's my point.
Is that as
of
girls'
course,
schools, we are
you've
proud
just called them women.
Of
you've
the tradition that we've had
you
of
have just, with
upholding
respect,
young
Charlotte Avery,
people and young women.
Charlotte Avery, you've just called them women. You've
yes.
just you've just identified
you just
them as female.
Yeah, yeah, sure. We are proudly supporting young women in our schools. What Natasha was saying was that when we address the groups in the schools to think in a more nuanced way about thinking about calling them either by, I would say, their first names, or indeed as students and pupils, is just to think about everybody in the classroom.
It's madness, isn't it? Just to think about everybody in the classroom. Because you might have one person there. In fact, you probably don't have anybody, but you might have one girl there who thinks she's a boy. Right. So we have to allow for that. Change all of our language. Tear up the dictionary. Rewrite it. Put draconian and Orwellian rules in place that cast people down and have people labelled as bigots if they don't use the right gender pronoun. That's what these lunatics are after. To be fair to Morgan, he more or less makes this point.
Everybody in the classroom as well.
You're
so
not,
we
you're
are
not thinking
so
about everybody, though, are you? You're thinking about a very tiny...
supporting girls in
you're thinking, you have been bullied, and I say this with respect to you, I think you have been bullied as an association by what I think is this radical transgender campaign that's going on.
Simple as that, but it's far deeper than that. Morgan doesn't have... I won't say he doesn't have the capacity. I don't know whether he does or whether he doesn't. But it doesn't appear that Morgan has any clue as to what's really going on. Morgan is probably not bright enough to wonder, why is this everywhere? Why is it everywhere? Why is it here? Why is it in the Republic of Ireland? Why is it in Europe? Why is it in America all at the same time? It's lunacy. But it's very, very clever in terms of those behind it and what they're trying to achieve with it, which is ultimately gender neutrality, the end of male-female, as we rush on into the post-human and futuristic transhumanist civilization. That's what it's about. I wonder if he ever thought about that, Morgan, to be fair to him. And he's right to take this on, you know, two or three times a week on his programme. He is absolutely right to take this on. Does he know what's really going on? I don't know. It is exactly 29 minutes past the hour for Thursday, the 23rd of November 2017. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a very quick break. When we come back, huge story in the Daily Express today. We'll tell you what the story is about. And then we'll be hearing from David Icke, not live, but a recording he made from Maastricht, which you're going to find fascinating. I know one or two of you will have heard it already, but it's worth hearing again. And there will be listeners around the world who have not heard it. So a quick break, back in a minute with more on your Richie Allen Show.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at creativeimaginings.com.au.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial. It's available now, so read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIcke.com.
And you're very welcome back. Thanks for tuning in this Thursday. This is your Richie Allen Show, of course, live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio and DavidIcke.com as well. A lot of interest, of course, in the transgender thing. Charlotte in Burnley believes that Morgan does have a very valid point with what he's saying, whatever anybody thinks about Morgan. But his co-presenters, Susanna Reid being one of them, shoot smarmy looks at the camera, making him look like a madman. That is frustrating as hell, says Charlotte. Of course, he loves that, Charlotte Morgan, because he's a massive ham. You know, he never saw a mirror he didn't worship, as I think David would say. Daniel tweets, it's because they don't understand the implication for the future of the human race. Transgenderism promotion is ultimately happening to get us used to the idea of fluid gender en route to no gender. Predictive programming, says Daniel. Johnny tweets, did the princess ask the effing frog permission to kiss him? Or perhaps she liked being a frog and didn't want to be a prince? All this talk of gender should be banned, says Johnny. We'd be as bad as them, Johnny, then, trying to ban something because we don't like it. Or ban the discussion of something because we don't like it. Hi to Helen Crosby. Lance Burkett tweeted, "How you doing, Lance? It has been suggested, Richie, to teachers for at least 5 years not to address mixed groups of students as guys for fear of offending them. It never has. And thankfully, my colleagues and I have not succumbed to this fake PC garbage." Lance, if you are a teacher, do feel free to give me a call when we open the phone lines shortly. Fluffles tweets, "The Bible addresses man and woman as genders. Are they going to abolish that?" That always reminds me of something funny, Fluffles. I'm an atheist. I'm a bona fide atheist. Well, atheism, I suppose, as it relates to organised religion, man-made religions. I have no time for any of it. But I remember some years ago, when I was living in Spain, we were out for dinner, Caroline and myself, with two wonderful people, friends of ours, Chris and Jan. And Chris and Jan had friends as well there. There's about six or eight of us at this pizzeria in Spain, having a great old time. And the conversation was about as far away from political correctness as it could possibly go, you know what I mean? I think if some of our Spanish fellow diners, I think if they could all have understood English, I think we would have been carted out the door and banished from the place forevermore. But the Bible is a funny thing, isn't it? In terms of people use the Bible to further an argument or to promote their argument. And often those people have no interest in the Bible, are not practicing Christians. I'll give you an example of that. We were chatting away at this dinner, and some of the people at the table had grown up sons. They're in their early 20s and they'd finished school and they were working in companies in Spain on the Costa del Sol. And one of the men in our party, we were all fairly well pissed at this stage, and one of the men was grumbling about gay men because he just didn't, "I just don't get gay men." So of course the women and some of the other guests at the table were saying, "Well, maybe gay men don't get you. What difference does it make? It's none of your business." It was all jovial anyway. And at one stage, our friend said, "It's just wrong. It's just absolutely wrong. Being gay is just absolutely wrong." Now, this guy was a Londoner, football fan, definitely very conservative in terms of his political point of view. And when he was asked, "What do you mean it's wrong? Who says it's wrong?" And he said the immortal words, "It's in the Bible! It's in the Bible! It must be true!" Of course, he never read the Bible in his life. So I don't know about the Bible and what the Bible says about man and woman. I just refer to my underpants. Whenever I find myself confused about who I am and what I am, and I'm doing it right now, let me just have a look down. Just remove my underpants there. Yes, I'm a man. I'm still a man. I'm a man today, the 23rd of November 2017. That is the Richie Allen Show Guide to Gender Confusion. Look in your fucking underpants! Right, okay. Ah, be Jesus, huh? It must be getting close to the weekend. I must be going stir crazy. Right, we're going to crack on because here's a very serious story. It's in the Bible! I swear I didn't have a drink before coming on. Now, excuse me, this is really important. Article in today's Daily Express. The headline: "We were lied to. Secret document number FCO30/1048 kept truth about EU from the British for 30 years. Shall I read it again? "We were lied to. Secret document FCO Foxtrot Charlie Oscar 30/1048 kept the truth about the EU from the British for 30 years. Here's the story. A secret document, which remained locked away for 30 years, advised the British government to cover up the realities of EU membership so that by the time the public realised what was going on, it would be too late. Almost all the shocking predictions, from the loss of British sovereignty to monetary union and the overarching powers of European courts, have come true. But damningly, for Tory Prime Minister Edward Heath and all those who kept quiet about the findings in the early 70s, the document, known as FCO30/1048, was locked away under the official Secrets Act rules for almost five decades. The paper was dated April 1971. It suggested the government should keep the British public in the dark about what EEC membership means, predicting that it would take 30 years for voters to realise what was happening, by which time it would be too late to leave. Isn't this lovely? That last detail was the only thing the disgraceful paper prepared for the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, FCO, got wrong. The unknown author, a senior civil servant, correctly predicted the then European Economic Community was headed for economic, monetary and fiscal union with a common foreign and defence policy which would constitute the greatest surrender of Britain's national sovereignty since 1066. He went on to say community law would take precedence over our own courts and that ever more power would pass away from Parliament to the bureaucratic system centred in Brussels. The author even accurately asserts that the increased role of Brussels in the lives of British people would lead to a popular feeling of alienation from government. But shockingly, politicians were advised not to exacerbate public concern by attributing unpopular measures to the remote and unmanageable workings of the community. They were told to preserve the impression that the British government was still calling the shots rather than an unelected body of foreign politicians, and that the ruse would last for this century at least, by which time Britain would be so completely chained to Brussels, it would be impossible to leave. Document FCO 30/1048, which has now been declassified under the 30-year rule, still shocks and angers Brexiteers. And there wasn't a word about it on BBC, ITV, ITN, Channel 4, C-SPAN, Fox, CNN. Not that it's of that much great interest to American news networks. But LBC, nothing to say about it today as far as I understand. As far as I could hear, I didn't hear all of their output today. Nobody wanted to talk about it. Now, David Icke is in Maastricht. He's speaking there on Saturday. He has written about this for years and years and years, and he's talked about the deliberate attempts to keep the truth about the EU hidden from people. He's been talking about this for 25 years. See, and the truth shall set you free. Coincidentally and synchronistically. Synchronistically. Is that right? Synchronistically? 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 It's in the Bible! David was in Maastricht yesterday, and it is very synchronistic. He filed this report for the subscribers to davidicke.com. It's a brilliant report. Have a listen to it. It's about 13 minutes long. Well worth paying attention to. David Icke yesterday.
Well, this nondescript looking building, most government buildings are, is the provincial government building for Maastricht in the Netherlands, where I'm speaking this weekend. And Maastricht has become most famous for something called the Maastricht Treaty. There's a plaque over here to commemorate what has been an absolute disaster for the people of what became the European Union. And this is where the European Union became the EU. Because it was here in 1991 that it was agreed to bring in this Maastricht Treaty, which was a massive centralization of power in the European Union. In fact, to transfer the name European Economic Community to what it became here, the European Union, and it was all ratified and went ahead in 1992. And as the ducks have a squabble here, it's quite appropriate, given the squabbling that goes on in the now European Union. And the whole story of the EU leads us here and beyond, of course, but it leads us here because, you know, people now in Britain, for instance, are arguing still over whether we should come out of the EU in Brexit after the referendum, whether we should stay in because it will be terrible. All the political classes and Tony Blair and all the usual suspects are wanting us to stay in the club that so represents their interests. But what they need to get their heads round is the fact that the EU, as it's become, and much further along the road of centralization of power and control that it wants to go into, was all planned from the start. See, after the Second World War, if you'd have offered the people of Europe a centralized dictatorship in Brussels, ruled by dark suit bureaucrats that most people can't even name, then the people would have said, well, hold on a second, they'd have said in Britain and other countries, we've just spent years fighting and dying and sacrificing and being maimed for life to stop the centralization of control in Europe. What are you doing saying, you know, we're going to hand over that control now without a bullet being fired? Go away, don't be stupid. So they're not going to tell us where they want to go. They sell us something that seems okay to a lot of people, a free trade area. So you join the free trade area. Oh no, there's no centralization of power. There's no giving up sovereignty. No, it's just a free trade area. Good for jobs. Very good for jobs. We now know through, and some people knew before, but we now know from British government documents being released that Ted Heath, the paedophile Satanist Prime Minister of Britain, the man who signed us in to what became the European Union in the early 1970s, had as part of that agreement, that negotiation, agreed to run down British manufacturing industry, run down the coal industry, run down the steel industry, and destroy, essentially, the British fishing industry as it was at the time. It was all planned from the start. So now, something that began, it's all documented in my books, way back at least in the 1920s, this was being orchestrated, this European Union, as it became in the background. Once it kind of hit the surface with the creation of the common market, just a free trade area, nothing to worry about, then the process started. I was always going to. There are letters that have come to light in which they were saying to each other, what we're going to do is constantly centralize power in the European Union as it became, step by step. And we're going to give an economic excuse for each step. And then eventually, before people realize, they'll be in basically a totalitarian, bureaucratic, controlled state without realizing it, through what I call the totalitarian tiptoe, step by step by step by step, and try to obscure the fact that all these steps are going in the same direction and they're all connected. So more and more, we heard, oh, well, what we want is just more centralization of power, because then it will be more efficient and much better and things will happen quicker, and all these excuses. And then we reached Maastricht here, where there was this colossal transfer of power in Europe from sovereign nations to the Brussels bureaucracy. Out of this also came the euro. And so, step by step, and of course, as you go step by step towards the centralization of power, you are gathering more and more power at the center with each step, and thus the more power you gather at the center, the more power you then have to centralize even quicker. And this Maastricht Treaty was an enormous step in that direction. Of course, it's been followed by the Lisbon Treaty, which took it even further into a centralized tyranny. So we have something that was planned from the start to be what it is now and what is planned to become, even more of a dictatorship. And this is the reason that when countries have had referendums, like over proposed European constitution, or whether the referendum in Ireland, etc., and other places, whenever the people have voted not to allow further centralization of power in Europe, which is the agenda, these manipulators have waited a little while, done more manipulation in the background, and then insisted on another referendum, which has given them the result that they want. And note, whenever they get the result that they want, more and more centralization of power, they never have another referendum after that. So, with the proposed European Constitution, some countries voted against it in referendums so comprehensively that these people realized that we can't go back, we probably won't win the second referendum either. So in an extraordinary barefaced in your face manipulation, they just said we're gonna replace the European Constitution with a treaty, the Lisbon Treaty. And because it's a treaty and not the Constitution that the referendums that voted against it were voting about, then those referendums are irrelevant, no longer count. What they didn't tell you is something like 98% of the changes that were in the proposed Constitution that was voted down in those referendums was in the Lisbon Treaty. And politicians across Europe knew that. They knew that they were completely ignoring the will of the people to push this agenda on. This is the political class. Doesn't matter what the party is in government, the same political class is pushing the same agenda. And so, we reached the point, this is why they're now trying to stop Brexit happening as best as they can. This political class, because it's a multi-party political class, where the majority in the Labour Party in Parliament and Conservatives and the Greens and Liberal Democrats, all these people, all want to stay in the European Union. They have ignored the wishes of the people. So when people in Britain were voting at an election, they had absolutely no way of voting for a party that was going to listen to them about the way the centralized dictatorship of the EU was transforming their society and imposing its will in fine detail upon their lives. Then along came UKIP and Nigel Farage, which, while people may have great disagreements with what they stand for in general, I do in many areas, but what they did, and Farage did brilliantly, because it's Nigel Farage, not really a party. Whenever he walks away, the whole thing seems to go pear-shaped. But what they did was give an ability for people in elections to vote the way they felt about the European Union. And they obviously became more and more successful. And this is where Brexit came about. David Cameron, Prime Minister, Conservative, thought he had to respond to this increasing success of the of UKIP that were anti-European Union. Because they were taking votes from the Conservative Party. They were actually taking votes from the Labour Party as well. So to do that, he promised a referendum on staying in the EU if he won the following election. He believed he'd never ever have to offer that. The polls were saying that it would be another coalition government, basically between him, the Conservatives, and the Liberal Democrats. The Liberal Democrats, who are EU bureaucracy to their DNA, would never have allowed that referendum to go ahead as part of the deal. But what actually happened is Cameron's Conservative Party won outright, against all the predictions. Now he's stuck with the EU referendum he'd promised. But nay, still, no problem. What we're gonna do is we're gonna frighten the great unwashed, the people we have absolute contempt for, by telling them in every manner we can think of that disaster will happen the morning after if you vote to come out of the European Union. Godzilla will attack London. We'll need an emergency budget, and so on. And they thought, job done. But it wasn't, because at last, the people had a clear in-out choice with no political party involved, and they took it in an incredible vote. And I said on the morning that that referendum result was announced, this is just the start, because this political class is not going to go quietly. And when I talk about political class, I mean that in Britain, which is pressing for Brexit to be stopped, and at the very least, fundamentally diluted. And that same political class in Britain is in league with the political class in Europe and the bureaucratic control system in Europe to bring Brexit down. And it is extraordinary to me that the driving force behind this stop Brexit is what we call the progressive mentality, not the liberal mentality. Forget liberal Democrats, they're not liberal. Forget liberal progressives, they're not liberal. They don't believe in freedom, they don't believe in democracy, they don't believe in freedom of speech, freedom of expression. What they believe in is freedom for people to agree with them. And because the Brexit referendum went against them, well, now they want to stop it, because only stupid people would vote to come out of the EU, so therefore what they think doesn't matter. No, only stupid people would vote to stay in terms of these progressives, a bureaucratic control system, which is only where it is now, not where it's planned to go. I was writing in my books in the 1990s about the plan was to create a European army, pan-European foreign policy, and taking more and more sovereignty away from nation states so that they basically were just local councils compared with the what's happening at the center in terms of power and dictatorship. In the last few months, they've been openly talking about creating a European EU army, and people like Macron in France have been making speeches about the need for more and more centralization of power, basically creating a United States of Europe under centralized control. That is where it was always planned to go from the very, very start. And here we have these people who call themselves, quite wrongly, liberal, and talk about freedom, talk about being the operative phrase, who are pressing for us to stay in a bureaucratic dictatorship that wants to delete all of those things. And so we are now seeing effort after effort to derail, to dismantle, to dilute what the people of Britain have voted for. And we mustn't allow it to happen. You know, this progressive mindset is so bewildered that many of the people who are pressing for us to stay in the European Union are the same people that go on marches and protests about the centralization of power in the world through what is called globalization. Centralization of power gives to the few more and more and more power, the more you do it, over the greater and greater many. Globalization, which they oppose, and the centralization of power in the European Union are expressions of the same global centralization of power. Wake up and start to see what's happening around you. Life is not random. World events are not random. Politics is not random. It's part of a tapestry of pieces all connected to take the human race into a point of centralization of power and control that most people couldn't even imagine. But that's where we're going. And this, in Europe, was a mighty, mighty step on that road, which is still going now and is planned to end with the deletion of freedom in every area of human life.
Excellent stuff from David in Maastricht yesterday. Synchronicity, eh? And not a word in today's media, not a word in the UK media today about secret document FCO 30/1048, the document that advised the British government to keep the truth about the European Union from the British people for 30 years. And I was thinking, as I was watching David's video this morning, the entire Western media, now in its entirety, is pro-European Union, including Russia Today. Including Russia Today. And we, you know, we praise Russia Today at times for some of its journalism around economic matters, around geopolitical matters. But Russia Today is every bit as much behind the European Union as any other organisation. It recently gave a talk show to Alex Salmond, the former leader of the Scottish National Party. I find this, and I spoke to my great friend and colleague Jean-Anne Crowley about this, about people with no acting skills being put into films and television shows just because they've become famous or because they were famous in another field. And I asked Jean-Anne, in fact I've asked other actors and actresses this question over the years. I've been a presenter and a producer for many years. I was trained, I did the hard yards, worked my way up from, you know, junior researcher to senior producer to presenter, winning awards along the way and all of that, which isn't important, I'm not bragging. But it fucks me off that people like Alex Salmond can be put in front of the camera or a microphone or Jacob Rees-Mogg or Nigel Farage or anybody else, and you can expect to have competence, you can expect to have journalistic skills. Listen to this crap. Alex Salmond had Alistair Campbell on. Now look, I know Salmond is pro-European Union, shamelessly, of course. The great irony of the Scottish National Party. We want independence from Great Britain so we can give over our sovereignty to the EU. See you, Jimmy. Madness. So Campbell was on with Alex Salmond, the new television presenter. It was bound to be rubbish. It was rubbish. Have a listen to this.
I do feel that the ground is shifting.
This is Alistair Campbell, by the way.
They've given up saying this is going to be great. Their only argument is, we voted for it, we have to make it happen. Do people think the government is handling it well or badly? Nobody thinks the government's handling it well. So we're, as a country, having voted for this, the country is now, I think, getting really concerned at the idea that we're putting our future in the hands of these people. I have never seen a more incompetent government, frankly, anywhere in the world, anywhere in Europe, as this one. Theresa May, who's a prisoner of the right, Boris Johnson, who's a proven liar, Michael Gove, who's just all about I don't know what, Liam Fox wandering around the world on his planes, making zero progress on trade, David Davis, who... you can tell when David Davis is not confident because he laughs more.
Now, you've been very hard on Boris Johnson and indeed the rest of the cabinet. And I should just say they could be in this chair being hard on you if they wish.
Absolute rubbish by Alex Salmond. Garbage. He's just called people liars. This is Alistair Campbell, the devil's right hand, the man responsible along with the murderous Tony Blair for the deaths of 1.5 million Iraqis. The dodgy dossier, the death of Dr. David Kelly, and Alex Salmond allows Alistair Campbell called Boris Johnson a liar. I don't care if Boris Johnson is a liar. But Alex, if you want to play in my world, if you want to play my game being a presenter, have the fucking courage to shout it, not to shout him down, but to stop him and say, hang on a second, who are you calling a liar? 3.5 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. Shortly, in about 5 minutes time, I will begin taking phone calls, and the numbers are pinned to the top of my Twitter feed and my Facebook feed. It is 0161 818 2018. 0161 818 2018, and you put all the prefixes in if you're in America or in Europe, but all of those details are on the meme anyway. Talk to me or not, I don't mind. Thursday's programme, this is Jamiroquai. I saw him a couple of weeks ago. He's brilliant. Jamiroquai on the Richie Allen Show. Big shout out to Helen Crosby there, who said, "Ooh, a bit of jammy rocky," as a teacher of mine once said. Helen, I used to work with a presenter called Bob Houston. Bob died back in 2001. He might have died in 2000. He's one of the nicest men that ever worked in radio, a brilliant presenter. And he was very kind to me, Bob, when I was starting out. Wonderful man. He couldn't pronounce Jamiroquai either. Bob did all sorts of radio, late night radio, country music. He was a very versatile presenter. And sometimes he would be asked to fill in. And he filled in on the Chart Show a couple of times. And God love him. He struggled with some of the names of some of the artists of the late 1990s. Lovely guy. You can call the programme. The numbers are on the meme, which is on Twitter and on Facebook. It is +44 and then 161 818 2018. We have a caller. Caller, you're very welcome to the programme. Good evening. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello.
Hello. That would be you, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. It's Paddy. How are you?
Paddy, I'm very well. As in Paddy. Hello. As in Paddy.
Paddy O'Hare.
Ah, Paddy. You see, I thought it might be you, Paddy, but I didn't want to presume anything. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I thought it was about time I rang.
About time you gave us a call. Paddy used to make programmes for Fab Radio in Manchester. He's now making a weekly television programme for Beyond Vision Television in the city. First time calling. You're very welcome, Paddy. And belated happy 40th birthday to you, by the way.
Thanks very much. It's kind of weird.
I remembered. Yeah, you were 40 at the weekend, weren't you? Happy birthday.
Thanks very much. Yeah, it was good fun. Lots of fun.
Right, my friend. You better get all political and get all political fairly lively. You know where you are, so the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things I could talk about. I mean, but I mean, in terms of even today's news, this about don't call female pupils girls or ladies, head teachers a wand. I mean, I just don't know where to start. This, and I know you've been talking about it a lot, and David's been talking about it a lot. But this gender neutral issue that is just everywhere across the media at the moment, and it's really starting to make me angry. As a kind of new dad, you know, my daughter's heading towards two now, so I can only, you know, imagine what this side of things she's going to face by the time she's in, you know, are we going to get this in her nursery school before she gets to school? I don't know.
You're worried,
how far is this going to go?
You and your partner, Paddy, you're thinking, what are they going to be telling her when she's old enough to understand it? This is the thing, isn't it? What's she going to be hearing, and what can we do about it? It's tough, isn't it? I don't know what to say to that.
I mean, and not only this, I mean, raising a kid now has been a minefield. I mean, you know, we've not really had a chance to discuss these kind of things yet. But, you know, the whole, injections issue as well was a major minefield over the past, you know, year and a half. Because, you know, you're under so much pressure from the doctors, from the public, from your family, you know, to make the right decision. And but in the end, you know, she did have some, but I did withdraw consent for MMR, and I was quite firm about that.
Paddy, tell me this. When, and first of all, I know Paddy. It's the first time Paddy's ever phoned in. I know him, so I will say this: Paddy is a guy who. He's a businessman, he's a smart guy, he's a presenter, and he gets his information from a wide variety of sources, different media sources, as I suppose anybody else should do. So Paddy would have come across, you know, a lot of different sources about, you know, about medicines and vaccinations and all of that. When you withdrew consent for MMR, was there any blowback, was there any pressure on you, and who put that pressure on you?
I was quite surprised that, but I have to say, there wasn't a great deal of pullback. There seemed to be a little bit of pressure to get them all done when we had the health visitor and stuff. But we did have one health visitor visit booked in before she was due to get the sort of next round of the injections and stuff. And she didn't actually show up on the day that she was supposed to. So it was kind of perfect, really, because we took that as the opportunity to not make another appointment. And we've just left them to it, and they've left us alone. So that's been quite a positive thing. But in terms of the MMR, I went along there with her. My partner had taken her to all the other appointments for the injections because I was kind of, as you can imagine, probably, you know, on the fence about the whole thing. But they wanted to give her all the, there's like four meningitis ones. So they wanted to give her the four meningitis ones, which I agreed to because I was under a bit of pressure there because my mother had a sister who died at, like, you know, 18 months old from meningitis. So there was quite a bit of pressure for me to, you know, for us to do that. But they wanted to give her the four meningitis, and they wanted to give her how many others? It was like seven total. They wanted to give her in one session.
Seven in one go, so Paddy. In one go, in one day, in one visit.
Serious. Yeah. Jesus. They wanted to give her the four meningitis and the MMR.
Now you do occasionally listen in to us, so you will have heard
much as I can.
Yeah, and you would have, well, thanks for that, Paddy. You would have heard on a couple of occasions over the last 2 years, we've had a wonderful woman on from America called Alyssa Nethery, and we've had Luke Maguire on, and both Luke and Alyssa, both their babies, had six or seven. In fact, Alyssa's baby was given 13 in one day, and her baby died. And Luke Maguire's baby began to have, and his partner, the baby began to have all sorts of fits. So did you put the knockers on that? You said no way to seven in the one go.
Yeah, I said no way. I said I'm withdrawing consent for MMR anyway. Because, you know, it, out of all of them, I mean, there's been reports about most of them, really. But I just said, well, you know, that's where I'm going to draw the line. and I said I was investigating getting them done separately, which I actually was. But you can't, I think there's one of them that you can't get out of MMR as a separate. But you can get two of them separately from like a, you have to go to a private clinic and pay. It's like, you know, it's about 70 quid a jab. But the private clinic that does it, that they, you know, they say that, you know, there's no egg in them. There's no, you know, metals, et cetera. They provide a service of as clean as you can possibly get, I presume, that inoculation. So,
Paddy, that in itself is, you know, should be a red line, or at least a red flag for people who think that the vaccine researchers are crazy. So there are people who say that Brandy Vaughan, the Merck whistleblower that we've had on the program, Andy Wakefield, yeah, there are people who say these people are crazy. But you're saying to me that you have private healthcare providers who will actually say, well, our vaccines are cleaner, effectively.
That was basically what they were saying, yeah.
Well, this is extraordinary, yeah, right? I mean, that is extraordinary stuff. People should listen to that. That is incredible. Oh, well, yeah, ours are cleaner. It doesn't have this and it doesn't have that. Well, the question begs, yeah, why, when somebody using public health or the NHS or whatever, why, yeah, would they get vaccines with different ingredients in them? Can I ask you this, Paddy? Exactly. Your baby's mum, how is she kind of aligned with you in terms of thinking about these issues, or, you know, do you think differently about them?
To a certain extent, yeah, certainly with the MMR. I mean, she was happy to go along with me with that, definitely. In terms of the other ones, you know, we didn't want to do it at one point, and then it all came down to the line quite quickly, and she went and got them. So we were a bit up and down with it all, but this is where, you know, the issue gets complicated, really, is because, you know, one of you's got an opinion, the other one's got an opinion, and then everybody else wants to weigh in. You know, you start asking people, yeah, for advice on it. You know, God forbid you ask advice on social media.
I know. Well, this is the thing. Yeah. And do you know what happens when you go to social media route is very well-meaning people, they generally have one, yeah, answer and one answer only, Paddy, and that answer is, watch this YouTube video. And it could be anybody, yeah, you know what I mean? And like, well, look, that's not going to prove anything to me. It's just somebody else's opinion. But I'm getting a lot exactly of calls on this, and I'm thinking there's a lot of calls trying to get in, and I'm thinking some of them will want to talk about this. Is there anything, sure, else? Anything else you want to add, Paddy? I don't want to cut you off without you saying what, you know, you absolutely came to say.
No, not at all. I mean, I did want to mention that to you at least, because, you know, because we've not had a chat about that yet. I mean, there's plenty of other things I'm sure we could get into, but at the same, you can hear her laughing in the background.
Yeah, just about. Yeah, yeah, lovely.
But yeah, yeah, it's all good. We'll have to catch up and have a beer at some point.
We certainly,
yeah,
will have a beer. And folks, check out Paddy's TV show on BVTV. Go to BVTV online and check him out there. Thanks for that, Paddy. You've just dropped a massive bombshell there about, you know, paid for private healthcare providers basically saying,
yeah,
our vaccines don't have this and don't have that. That's the first I've ever heard of this.
That was effectively it. If, wow, I can find some of the text on that, I'll fire it over. But keep up the good work, Richie, and best to David and all the rest of your team. And,
you're a gent, Paddy. Remind us of your little girl's name.
Luna.
Luna. Beautiful name, Paddy.
Luna.
These are the great times, eh? Fantastic. So, well, look, great stuff, mate. Congratulations on your 40th as well. Thanks for calling in. Really pleasant surprise to hear from you. And thanks for that very, very important information. Cheers, Paddy. Talk again real soon.
All the best, mate.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Great to hear Paddy O'Hare on the programme. Paddy's a musician. He's a working musician. He's a businessman as well and a broadcaster. And how incredible is that? Our vaccines are cleaner than those vaccines, so come and pay us. Wow. It's 0161818 2018, new number. However, you don't have to phone me. You can connect to me on Skype. The Skype handle is, what is it? It's Chat with Richie. Chat with Richie. It's in the Bible! What is it, 18 and a half minutes past the hour? I'll be saying that in my sleep. We have another call. Caller, welcome to the programme. Good evening. That's you, sir, or ma'am. Who's this? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
It's Lance Burkett.
Lance! Welcome to the
Hey, Richie.
I threw the gauntlet down to you earlier on, didn't I, on Twitter? I did indeed. Because we were talking about, obviously, we're talking about teaching and all that goes with it, and the gender pronouns and the neutrality. Welcome, Lance. First-time caller, long-time tweeter. What do you want to say, my friend? Go ahead.
It was just interesting. I was thinking back to when I first started teaching in the mainstream about 5 years ago, and we teachers get observed, as you know, quite rightly so, but it can be quite intense. And it was my first observation, and I thought it had gone really well, which indeed it turned out it had. But I went to get feedback from my manager afterwards, and the only comment that they pulled me up on was, don't call the students guys. And, you know, I was expecting that was a crap session, what you do, you know, and it wasn't. The only thing they pulled me up on was that, and I said, well, you know, I'm a Yorkshire man. We speak in our native accents, as you do yourself.
Yeah.
So I'd said, you know, morning guys, how's it going? You know, once or twice, apparently, subconsciously, they didn't even know I'd done it. And I was reprimanded, said, don't do it again, it may offend them.
It might offend them, Lance. Don't do it again, it might offend them.
Yeah, don't do it again. So I went back and spoke to some of my colleagues about it, and they said they'd have the same experience on their observations and, you know, other things outside the classrooms. So just be very careful how you address students, because they may be offended.
And I suppose it's difficult for you being assessed, because no matter what way you play it, you're always going to come across as defensive, aren't you, Lance? So go ahead.
Speaking in a broad Yorkshire accent, as I do, it's quite easy to offend everybody, as you might imagine. But, you know, guys, girls, people, folks, they're the kind of terms we would use, and that's what I would use in class. And funnily enough, I've continued, you know, since that day, which is almost 5 years ago, I've continued just to talk to students how I see fit as human beings, as people. And not one of them has ever put a complaint in against me that I'm aware of. And no other management has said anything. But there's certainly a culture now of fear closing in on teachers of what to say and what not to say, especially with this transhumanist
You're obviously an active and a working teacher. So
yeah.
You notice this. You notice that teachers are starting to become a bit nervous about what they say.
The last 18 months, which has become quite obvious, there's been a massive turn, you know, it's the only way I can really describe it, in attitude, in that, you know, I mean, I teach predominantly 16 plus, so it's that late teens, kind of early 20s that I deal with mainly, but there's been a massive shift in, I don't know what you would call it, but kids of that age are definitely aware of what's going on.
And tell me this, Lance, are there directives coming from the various department heads? Are they saying things like in memos and emails, you've got to say this and you've got to say that? Do you notice those sorts of things?
We've not had any what you would call direct, don't do this, don't do that, but we have those conversations in passing, and in when we have staff meetings and meetings with managers, we have that, just be very careful what you say. And obviously there's been a lot of work done around, you know, the prevent and all that.
Yeah,
and British values, and it's all getting very, 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 very muddy.
And Lance, your age is none of my business. I don't want to know, but I would guess in the current climate, with everything that's going on with Westminster, with all the gender pronouns, and you have to be careful what you say to people, you're teaching people that are in, you know, 16, 17, and people that are in their very late teens. You know, I don't want to come across as sensationalist, but I'd be a little bit nervous now if I was in your shoes about being around girls, being around women. Are you, Lance? How do you deal with that then? Yeah. Do you make sure that you're never on your own with?
That's what I was just going to say. If we're speaking to students about minor issues, even about good, you know, praising students, we would never put them in a room on their own. There's always another member of staff.
Wow.
It is very like that. We're very powerless as well. We have no power in terms of chastisement or
so
real.
If you have to get stuck into somebody to give them a bit of a wake-up call, it's very, yeah. very difficult to do that because you're restricted yeah. in what you can say and stuff. Jesus.
Yeah, and of course, kids are very switched on now, and they kind of know that you have no power. So there's a lot more, you know, pushing from the student side than what there would have been at one time, and it can be quite confrontational and quite scary.
Do you want to give us an example, Lance?
Yeah, I mean, I chastised a student quite recently for ultra poor attendance. Took a bit of an offence to it, and wouldn't say squared up to me, but you know, he was making his feelings, you know, known that if I didn't back down and, you know, let him away with it, that things might get a little bit more heated. And that's something I don't think would have happened 5 or 6, maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I've had other cases where, you know, I've had to chastise a student and then they've brought parents in and parents come in acting the same, you know, irate and, you know, for things that you and me would have got a clip round the ear for, you know.
Yeah, or a good dressing down. I mean, when I was in high school in my late teens, I had a difficult childhood. I've never felt like a victim. I don't claim victimhood at all. I'm not a victim, but I had a difficult time of it, and because of that I acted yeah. out, you know, I yeah. acted out. I used the fact that bad things had happened to me to get away with stuff, and some of my yeah. teachers were very good and they took a strong line with me, and yeah. And I think they were right to. I wasn't hit or caned or anything like that, and I know damn well that's not what you're talking about, but they stood in front of me and dressed me down angrily and said, you get your act together, you know.
Yeah, but on the same token now, Richie, we would be, you know, told or made to go down the I'll call it the mamby-pamby route, that don't upset them, you know. Let's
this is what
to, you know,
yeah, this is what David calls generation jelly. Are we creating people, are we sending into the world young men and women incapable of taking criticism, of taking responsibility?
We certainly are, from my experience. I mean, I have teenage kids as well, and thankfully our teenage kids are quite good, but they, you know, they've even said to me that, you know, God, I wish some of my friends had just, you know, excuse the French, man up.
Yeah.
But you can't even say that anymore, can you? You know, because you're going to offend somebody. But, you know, so not all kids have, you know, succumbed to it, thankfully. I don't know whether that's pressure from me. But there's certainly a massive percentage of students out there hiding behind, you know, you know what I mean, Rich. I mean, there's a lot of copycat stuff going on. There's some genuine cases out there that genuinely need help and are genuinely confused. But by the same token, there's a hell of a lot of people jumping on that bandwagon and using it for their own ends.
For attention and for other things as well.
But we have to deal with all those cases, you know, the same. And it makes it very difficult sometimes to just get on and do your job, you know, to teach. You know, teaching becomes second to the dealing with Generation X's, you know.
Yeah, conditions is a great way of putting it. And is there support from the faculty? I mean, do your colleagues, are you a support for one another? Because they're obviously going through this as well.
That's really all we have, support for one another, because like with all institutions where there's money involved, I think it's a little bit like the customer's always right, you know. Customer being the student.
It's not put you off teaching, has it, Lance?
Yeah, it has, yeah.
Has it? Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, I've taught photography for a long time, privately, and I decided to give the mainstream education thing a bash about 5 years ago, and in that 5 years, it's destroyed my faith in the education system, let's say, because I now see what's really going on. It's a difficult place to work currently.
And I've heard from teachers on the programme over the years, NUT delegates and people, who say the teachers are so frustrated, because sometimes when programmes like this talk about education, we, without meaning to, because we certainly don't mean to, it can sound like we're having a go at teachers when we're not. We know that teachers' hands are tied. We know that teachers want to do the right thing for children. We know that. You know, our teachers were good. My teachers, apart from 1 out of 100, if I had 100 over the years, and I didn't, I probably had 50 between, you know, temporary teachers and high school teachers and primary school teachers or whatever. You could say there was one bad apple. You know, there were some tough teachers who gave me they gave me what for when I needed it. But I'm thinking some of the things that were said to me when I was acting out, and some of the, I mean, I got proper dressed down a couple of times. I was scared. Teachers were, you know, giving me stick, but it wasn't bullying. It wasn't, you know, wrong. But I think
it was realism, wasn't it?
It was it was a wake up call, and I reckon some of what was said to me, which I deserved and needed to hear, probably wouldn't be allowed today.
No, we're really not allowed to say anything. We have to. It's like being in a negotiation with a hostage or a terrorist. You know, it really is that. Don't say anything that may upset them. Don't say anything that might give them ammunition to fire. But, you know, you've really got to almost succumb to their demands, which is very frustrating because, you know, ultimately all we want to do is teach and teach all the kids the same and have them all do well. But we'd...
So Lance, they get to go through high school, or if it's college, they get to go through it on their own terms, which is just ridiculous. Yeah. You know, we talked about this on recent programs. They get a tailor-made experience of school or college where nobody challenges them.
They can also skip from college to college, course to course. You know, if you get to a point where you have to eject them off the course and you get back up from management to do that, they can just happily then go on to another course and do the same thing again.
And the taxpayer loses out.
Yeah.
In some cases, right? In some cases, yeah. Jesus, Lance.
Yeah.
It's a
bleak very
picture.
Difficult place to work.
my friend and colleague, Jean Ann, I mention Jean Ann all the time because she's a great help with the programme for me. She's listening with great interest to this in Ireland, and she says, it's hardly going to make them into responsible adults being allowed to get away with treating teachers like that. And this is the point, isn't it? This is the point. They're not going to become responsible, self-critical, self-analytical adults. They're not. No. They're going to become generation jelly automatons. What use is that?
I can definitely see that there's been a massive swing in terms of, you know, self-awareness. You know, students have gone from being happy to, and eager to go out and do work experience and try things to, oh, do I have to? I don't have to, do I? You know, there's a lot more of that attitude. And certainly with this more recent trans that's going on, that's kind of muddied the waters even more because, you know, there's a lot of genuine confused teenagers out there, but there's a lot of, like I said before, teenagers who have seen this and thought, oh, if I do that, then I can get some privileges and some time out and some days off and some segregation and some whatever it is they want. And there's nothing we can do about it as teachers. We have to, you know, assume when you really know, you know, you can't tell the ones who are trying and who aren't, but we have to treat them all the same, give them all the same support. And it's you know, can be life-sucking from a teaching perspective, and it affects all the other kids who are behaving, who are coming in regular, who are doing the right thing.
That sounds very difficult. It sounds like it's very difficult for you to deal with that, because on the one hand, you've got young men and women, because we're not coming down hard here on young men and women, it's only on some young men and women, and I hate to, because it sounds very patronising to even say young men and women, we're not old either, but there are those then that really want to get stuck in, they want to do something, and you want to do, you know, obviously what's best for them, but it's difficult with everything else going on.
Yeah, we're spending more time coming out of the classroom dealing with issues that, you know, a couple of years ago, the issues wouldn't have been there, but now they are.
Lance, do me a favour, Lance. I'll tell you what I'm going to do, because I've been thinking about this. There's about 3-4 teachers that have been on this programme over the years, and we got on well with them, and they've all expressed interest in coming back. What I'm going to try and sort out, maybe early in December, if not at least very early in January, I want to get some teachers. I want to get some college teachers, some high school teachers, and I want to get them onto a programme where we can spend 90 minutes talking about the issues around education. Do me a favour. When we do that, please be a part of that. I'd love to have you on.
I would, yeah. Be a pleasure.
Lance, I know, I mean that. For the moment, we'll leave it there. Thanks for sharing those experiences. Good luck with it, mate. I mean, sincere good luck with it. It sounds like, you know, you're pulling your hair out there.
It's a difficult time. And as you know, it's not going to get any better anytime soon, is it?
No, but with people like you, mate, I always feel there's hope when there are men and women like you there who want to do the right thing by people. I think there's always hope, you know.
My teaching colleagues and my, you know, all the people that help teachers, the technicians, and they're all fantastic. They're all in the same boat. They're all pulling the same amount of hair out. They're all, you know, feeling it. But they are all great people. And all the ones I work with are all there for the right reasons. You know, so we're certainly not doing it for the money or for the gravitas.
No, most teachers do it for the love of being around, you know, vibrant, energetic young men and women that you can help out one way or the other.
It needs a slight change in phrase from what we call. We call teachers, Richard, but really what we are is social workers.
Yeah. Do you know, the more I hear people like you, and I've heard people like you speak to BBC Radio 5 Live at times, and they sound as frustrated and as disillusioned as you, Lance. And I think that's a tragedy, mate. Thanks for coming on and saying that to us, by the way.
Pleasure,
I really
Richard.
Mean
speak
that.
Again soon, fella.
Absolutely. I'm going to save your number, Lance, so I'll be in touch.
All right, buddy.
Thank you very much. That was lovely. Lance there, not lovely in terms of what he was saying, but lovely that he did it. Lance, in Yorkshire, teacher, coming on to talk about his experiences. Now, there are calls coming in. I am going to take them on, but if I don't take a break, I'll be in trouble. When I come back, I'll take some more calls. 25 to the top of the air. This is your Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial, it's available now, so read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Fantastic calls from Paddy and from Lance. I wanted to take loads of calls on, and I've had about 50, at least, from different callers calling from God knows where, UK mobile numbers. But what Paddy was saying and what Lance was saying was very, very interesting. And I couldn't, and I didn't want to, of course, just move them on. Straight back to the calls. Caller, welcome to the programme. Good evening. Who are you and where are you calling from?
Ah, hello there.
Hi.
Am I getting through to you?
You are through. Who's this?
Oh, it's Bill. I live in Northumberland.
Bill in Northumberland, you're very welcome to the programme. Thanks for calling, Bill. The floor is yours, my friend. Go ahead. What would you like to say?
Thank you. I got your number from the Bible and I thought I'd try it out.
It's in the Bible. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah. No, what I was thinking, I was listening to your first caller and obviously a young father there and all the trials and tribulations gone through with the vaccines, and it brought back memories of when I first became a father. This was in the early 1980s, and believe it or not, we had a delegation at the door when we refused the vaccinations of any kind. We had a doctor, we had a nurse, we had a head teacher, another teacher, and I think there was some other lackey turned up saying that we must, and this is in the early 1980s, that we must have our children vaccinated. And we said, no, the government pissed off, because... We brought our children up with herbal remedies and homeopathy and things like that.
Bill, this is the early 1980s. You said,
It is, yes.
The early 1980s. That's what we're talking. So you said no vaccinations, and next thing, this gang of doctors and social workers turn up to the door. Wow.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It was. And then we said, well, we've got no problems because we've got a family friend who was a homeopath and a herbalist, you know, why would we need any of your stuff? And, I think we're a bit ahead of our time because, I grew up totally against all of this kind of garbage. And, my heart went out to your friend who was on first when he was talking about
Paddy,
the pressure they're under now. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it must be terrible to be a young parent these days with all this bullshit about transgender and all this shit that they're getting thrown at them and the vaccines escalating. Now, bringing things up to date, I work in the mental health industry. As you can see, I'm not a great fan of a lot of it. And at some of the meetings, we have joint meetings with public health and, public authority and things like that. Down where I work, and we have things like propaganda time when you have someone from public health pushing vaccines of some kind, like the flu or whatever. And I'm now quite kind of famous for speaking up against it at the public meetings and getting, here he goes again and all of that. Privately, one of the people from public health said he was pushing this stuff like a drug pusher. Basically, she said, "I don't agree with vaccines." And I just can't believe how can anybody push this rubbish, and just because it's a job.
And privately, privately, she disagrees with it.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, what kind of society is this we're living in? I just can't believe this.
She's pushing it on behalf of the World Health Organization through the NHS, and at the same time, she doesn't believe in it.
That's correct.
Can I ask you this, Bill? Your child who never got vaccinated in the early 1980s, how did she grow up or he grow up? How is she health-wise these days? What was their health like?
We had two, a boy and a girl. And then they were the healthiest people in the school, healthiest kids in the school.
Amazing.
And they're now in the late 30s now. I guess I'm not very good with numbers, but they've stayed very healthy. I'll tell you another example of my daughter. The local school in County Durham where we lived at the time, they went over to France for this. It was a regular trip the schools made to a certain place in France, and there was a food poisoning outbreak over there. So we went to meet the buses, and it was like I would imagine a mining disaster would have been in the early parts of the last century, where we're all standing out, all the parents are getting really worried, and the buses came in, and the teachers got off the buses white, very, very ill, kids getting off very ill, and the last one to get off the bus was my daughter, and she says, "Oh, I don't know what all the problem was about, those soft buggers, what were they like,
Fantastic, Bill.
That's been the kind of, the way they've been all along, really quite healthy.
Do you,
and I think it's because we wouldn't let them have that poison,
You wouldn't let them have the vaccines. Do you sometimes hear stories about parents who get into trouble for refusing the vaccines? And do you sometimes think that if you were a younger man and the children were born later on, you might have found it more difficult to do, you know, what you did, which was not give them the vaccines.
I don't think I'd be any different.
No, you'd be the same. You'd be the same, right?
I've been against pretty much everything most of my life. Came across David in the early 90s. Actually, I saw him at the Isle of Wight when he started his tour off. It's just been incredible.
We were in the same room.
He's getting younger. He's getting younger, in a sense. I don't know where he gets his energy from.
Well, when he gets up on one of these stages to do what he does, the years fall off him, don't they? The years kind of peel away. It's amazing, really.
Yeah.
Not that he's old.
I mean,
he's not old anyway.
Preston years ago, and he's got more energy now than he had then. And then he had energy. My God, always did.
Now, Bill, tell me this. What about your grown-up son and daughter? Do they have the same approach now with their own families as you had? Do they think vaccines are a bad idea as well?
Well, it's sad to say they haven't had families. I'm not sure why.
Still time?
Yeah, still time. Yeah. I'd quite like to be a grandfather, to be honest. I'm almost adult enough now to be a grandfather. Nearly, almost.
I say you'd be a great grandfather. Do you know that? Listening to that, I imagine you'd be an absolute gift to a grandchild, Bill. Extraordinary stuff, that. No, seriously, I mean that sincerely. Listen, thanks for telling us that. I'm about 8 minutes away from ending the programme.
Richie, I'm talking to you too much.
No, yeah, you're not. No, fine. I could speak to you all night, and I mean that sincerely, but there's one particular number that's been trying to get in for 20 minutes.
I'm going to try and get in a hurry.
Yeah. No,
thank you so much.
It was an honour to speak to you, Bill. Thanks for sharing that with us, by the way.
Keep up the good work, man.
You're a gentleman. Thank you. That was Bill in Northumberland there, who back in the very early 1980s said no to vaccines. For his children, who are grown up now, they're in their 30s, they were the healthiest children in the school, and Bill said that there was an initial bit of blowback, Bill said, in terms of that when they said no to the vaccines, the head teacher, Bill said, he said the doctor didn't, and he said healthcare workers turned up, but they were able to rush them away, put the rush on them, and the children grew up incredibly healthy, which is a wonderful thing. Let's go to the phones again. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who are you and where are you calling from?
Hi, Richie. My name's Pete. I'm calling from Gloucester.
Hey, Pete in Gloucester. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. How are you?
I'm very well, Pete. Thanks for calling, my friend. Time is pressing, as you can probably guess, so the floor is yours. Go ahead.
As always. Yeah, lovely. So, a couple of things I wanted to touch on. Obviously, the callers have said there's been a lot of issues discussed, but ironically it fits, as far as I would see, into all of the one area that maybe perhaps people are unaware of or could probably make a little bit more sense of. I understand you would be insane to make a rational argument that it's not going to cause any disruption or problem, that somebody's going to be able to say, I'm male at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
I'm female at 4 o'clock later in the afternoon. And somehow you're meant to keep up with my gender diary ledger. And if you don't, then, you know, we'll destroy your career home, as Owen Jones would say, send on a course.
Send on a course, yeah.
Yeah, if anyone could actually think, no one deep down thinks that is sane or makes common sense. Okay, even when we see the such as like this morning, but you know, the protagonist such as Piers Morgan coming on there, you finally start, and I've already heard some of your callers saying, well, you know, I'm getting bloody angry, and when I'm not using my common sense, it is exactly the same reaction. But just like the reasons why you have the Nigel Farages, the Piers Morgans, okay, they are put there as protagonists. All right. I believe it or not, Piers Morgan came up, made absolutely 100% perfect sense. And I agreed with the point that he was making. But is any wonder why somebody of that character or stance, who, let's remember, says things like 9/11 obviously did happen, and anyone who thinks outside of the party line is a nutcase, he's constantly on being aggressive and arsy towards people.
Yeah.
It gives a very clever psychological undertone to say, If that then makes sense to you, then obviously you then take on all the attributes of that character and personality. Okay? There's one thing I just want to read you, if I may.
Go ahead.
This will make a lot of sense to people when, and it will tie a lot of these articles together. Okay? There was back in the 80s, you know, such as obviously the interviews with Richard Day and all those other wonderful things. There was a KGB defector. If anyone doesn't know this, obviously that was the original spy force of the Soviet Union. A chap called Yuri Bezmenov. Okay? Now, this was an undercover Soviet agent who defected to the United States. And he read out quite clearly that America and Western countries, if you know your homework, communism has been incubated and looked after almost, since the beginning of this century by a completely other force and has nothing to do with the Russians or communism. This way of thinking has been grown and nurtured since the early 1900s in wait for something as silly now as we're talking as World War III. But anyway, the face of this is called obviously by the KGB. He goes down and describes quite clearly there are four stages, one of which are already in play by the Soviet Union, by communism, okay, to subvert and destroy the Western nations. Okay, and I'll read just very quickly.
Very quickly, Pete, because we're running out of time. Go ahead.
This will be 2 minutes, very quickly, as I said, and that's me done. He said, essentially, our perception of reality... So he said, the main emphasis... there we go, right. So the first stage one. The stage is So they're all good. I was working up to it, and then I can't find the bit I'm looking for. Okay, here we are. He goes on to say, what he's basing is a change of the perception of reality of every Westerner to such an extent that despite the abundance of information, no one is able to come to any sensible conclusion in the interest of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. In a great brainwashing process, which goes very slow and is divided into four basic stages, the first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of the enemy exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In the other words of Marxist Leninism, the ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of Western students without being challenged or counterbalanced by basic values of those countries. He said that, to paraphrase, the basic stage of that is then to cause destabilization in the country. He goes on then to say, as I said, if I could just obviously, what I'll do is I'll paraphrase. And this is one of the most important things when we're having a go at all these people who are passionate about this cause, okay? When the job is completed, that there are none that are needed anymore. They know too much. Some of them will then see that this Marxist-Leninist comes to power. Obviously, they get offended. They think that they will come to power. That will never happen, of course. They will be lined, obviously, in the terms of what he was saying in the 80s, they will be lined up against the wall and shot. But they may turn into the most bitter enemies of Marxist-Leninism when they come to power. The moment they serve their purpose, all these useful idiots are used, will either be entirely, will be executed entirely, or exiled or put into prison. Many former Marxists are now in prison.
This is okay? Chapter and verse, pretty much chapter and verse, what we've seen with this progressive agenda. And he's describing, we're talking about Yuri Bezmenov, he's describing there those that are going to be exiled or shot, that's the frontline soldiers of this progressive agenda.
Well, that's correct. All the absolutely. NGOs and even things like all these groups of the transgressives, all these, and as I said,
Pete,
I will say very quickly at the top, he obviously uses the term Marxist-Leninism, and I said, obviously, that's just a front thing. He says, Essentially, our perception of reality has been changed. We mistake evil for good and embrace our own destruction.
Yeah.
These Satanism inversions of all values. By evil, I am referring to Zionism, globalism, feminism, liberalism, abolition of Christianity, gender, sexual degeneracy, family, in a word, communism, Kabbalism, Jewish Satanism. Protocol 16 says society will be inducted into this faith. And he said, explain that the social justice warriors and Antifa will be lined up and shot because when they realize they have been duped, they will represent a threat. Now, obviously, there's another very famous person, Winston Churchill, just to finish off, and said, the further you look into the past, the further you will be able to see in the future. Okay? This just keeps going and plays on repeat and repeat and repeat. It's an old adage.
Yeah.
You look at even Nazism. What did Hitler do is a famous thing called the Night of the Long Knives. He had a terror group called the Brown Shirts. And in that one night, because these guys have been the main force, all the target groups, all the ones that attack the other political parties and caused all the instability in the country, basically, these were the soft head idiots, and in one night he did away with all of them, and that simply was because they were too much of a liability, and could have been therefore a challenge to him now that he had established power.
So Pete, that's
time and immemorial.
That's brilliant, mate. Sincerely brilliant. It's great that you brought him up, and I advise our listeners, if you haven't heard of Yuri Bezmenov, the communist propaganda guy who defected to the West and chapter and verse gave to anyone who would listen, effectively what Pete just said there, it's really important stuff. Pete, the programme is over. I've got to get out, mate. Thanks for calling in, and
I really
appreciate you saying that. Really interesting stuff, mate.
Take care.
Thanks, Pete. Bye for now. That was Pete in Gloucester. And to anybody who was trying to ring in there, and a lot of people were trying to get through, I'm sorry that we ran out of time. I really am. I'll do another one of these next week, and I will keep a list of those calls that were coming in, and if you're around next week, I'll give you a priority. We'll get you on at the start. It's as simple as that. So apologies if you were trying to get in and you couldn't get in. We just had too many calls coming in. That was an enjoyable programme from my point of view. I enjoyed it. Thanks so much for listening to it. Thanks to our callers who had fascinating and vitally important things to say in the second hour. I really appreciate that. Right, that's it until Sunday View then. Look after yourselves and one another. Enjoy the weekend. I hope the weather picks up a bit. I don't know what it's going to be like for the weekend, but do have a good weekend. I'll be back with you on Sunday morning. That's 11 a.m. UK time. 11 a.m. UK time. I'm not going to move the time of Sunday View. I was going to do it, move it a bit later, but it's always going to be at 11. Reviewing the Sunday newspapers and more. That's at 11 on Sunday. Until then, stay in touch with davidicke.com for the news that you don't get on commercial and national media, and do tune in to fabradiointernational.com. They have a fantastic array of wonderful, entertaining, totally unique and independent radio programmes there. I'm going to leave you with some Radiohead. And speak to you on Sunday. Big shout out to Simon Stewart, my mate who looks after the YouTube channel, and to my friend Jean Ann in Cleggan in Galway, the Richie Allen Show team. It's a small team, but it's good. See you Sunday. Bye. When you were here before, couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Skin makes me cry. You float like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so fucking special. But I'm a creature.